Dear all, we are meeting yet another session. This is episode number 7 of Audible Weed Walk. And this is Nina. If you're somebody who is just happening upon this podcast only now, time permitting, go back and hear the previous podcast, and you may find that the topics are loosely connected, which may be interesting. Today, I will talk about a few things. I will probably introduce a few teasers that we can address next week if you want. In the meantime, if you are listening to the podcast, you can email me at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com or at the Edible Weed Walk YouTube channel. You can post comments where these podcasts are also posted, apart from the Oroville radio site. So email me feedback, questions and recommendations. Or if you have an experience to share, share as well. If it is to do with the edible weed and the related adventure. Why do you think people forage? Have you come across the term foraging? I have found that people forage for various reasons. Each person has a different entry point, like everything else. You know, I was taking this bioenzyme workshop, that is the another thing I do, and I realized that, you know, there was a particular place I had been there at least 3 times, and each time I gave a workshop, they were complimentary, basically, they're all free, but, you know, there were people from that organization who could join just because we are holding the workshop there. But I felt each time that I went that perhaps they are there because, you know, they have been asked to. So there were no kind of self-motivated interest to do that. But in one of these sessions I had, and, you know, you could see that, you know, people were glazing over, their eyes were glazed over, and they were not necessarily listening, or if they were listening, it was perhaps too boring for them. But in one of the workshops, I had told that, you know, you can use bioenzyme as a skin toner. And the eyes lit up. Within the next 15 minutes, they had already planned that how they're going to make and what quantity of bioenzyme, where they are going to source their, you know, orange peels or lemon peels if they didn't have. So that's what it is. You know, each subject in each topic has a separate entry point for different people. So in case of foraging, some forage to ensure that the food on the table is absolutely fresh, local, non-GM, ultra organic, etc. People get into the practice for several other reasons, like, you know, life-changing book they read, a film they have watched, a retreat they have attended, and, or, you know, I have met also several people, actually, who I personally know, that their only child or one of their, you know, children got into some kind of allergy. Food allergy is actually pretty in thing. Increasingly, people, not just kids, have food allergies. And often this is connected to the, you know, kind of way the food is actually even grown, processed, preserved. So a lot of people I know got into foraging in order to, you know, provide their children the best food possible, healthy food possible. But as they got in, they started exploring and questioning the food itself, and their exploration went deeper. So I will introduce, I told you at the beginning that I'll introduce some teasers, which we may or may not address at this session, but definitely in the next one. So if I used to forage in my hometown, for example, and then I have got a job, I have gone away from my hometown, is it okay to order that same food that I used to forage online or ask a friend to buy it from somebody locally and then kind of pack and ship it to me just for the sake of nostalgia or just back that I'm missing that food? So what about that? Would it be still be called foraging if it is kind of exported beyond the local realm. How about ordering, for example, Rogbi honey from the Northeast India? They are excellent honey. If you have tasted Rogbi honey, it's just, you know, I am somebody who is not really particularly greatly fond. I don't have sweet tooth, thankfully. And not therefore, you know, not necessarily very fond of all the different kinds of honeys either. So when I went to Northeast and was offered a whole platter of different kind of honey, I said, no, you know, it's okay. I don't need to test. There were honey testing, you know, sessions. But, oh my God, it is so exemplarily beautiful and wonderful to taste these honeys. And Rogbi honey, I have learned that it is one of the most popular one, though there are other honeys which is as good and as wonderful. And these honeys are actually foraged. They are people who actually forage that. These honeys are not from, you know, beehive kept and, you know, reared and honey is extracted from there. These are, you know, wild honey, wild bees who actually make their hive in the forest and the honey is collected from there. So what about that? Because these honeys are available online in little jars. You can order them. So is it still be called foraging if you are doing that? How about a regular restaurant, not a pop-up lunch or dinner place? Pop-ups are, you know, if you are unfamiliar with it, pop-ups are basically, you don't have a regular restaurant, but you know, you have a chef or somebody who really knows how to cook, gathers up and creates an event. In that event, you sign up and there's, you know, a certain number of people that they can, you know, take. And it is kind of experiential cooking and eating session. Sometimes you participate in the cooking or you observe. And the chef comes and, you know, there is a particular theme to it. And often the theme is, you know, the farm to plate, which is they collect the food that day, that evening, along with you. And then the chef creates some awesome food. So these are called pop-ups. So maybe there are several actually pop-up initiatives with wild greens, without wild greens, but, you know, local. But how about if it's a regular restaurant there and you know that they serve foraged food? What kind of opinion you will have? What kind of question will you ask? I will ask, are they growing their greens? Because, you know, often as you have discovered, those who have started foraging, started coming to the edible weed walks or doing on your own, that the weeds that you find, if you do not pull them out from your, you know, little garden beds or collect the seeds and try to grow, most of them you can grow. So they are actually wild varieties, not cultivars you are growing. So therefore you have a very sure source where the water which you have used are from a, you know, clean water that you know. This is actually a good source of getting the wild greens for you to have a little, you know, weed garden around you or around your actual non-weed garden too. So if you encounter a restaurant, if I encounter a restaurant where they are advertising that they are serving foraged food, I would ask, are you growing your own food? Are you collecting the seeds and growing? Or you have actually kind of outsourced this and have several people source the material from the wild for you, and you are basically putting it together. What are the decisions to be taken in there? Have you thought about it? Because increasingly, these are the areas we need to think about it, because foraging, for one, is becoming very popular and it is for there to stay. In our experience here during the lockdown, we have found that most people have started foraging. Some people I know that they used to forage perhaps before, traditionally they foraged as they grew up. But this is something that, you know, with their changing lifestyle, it went away from their lives. So during the lockdown, some of this old knowledge came handy. There are actually a lot of social papers been written internationally on attitude towards foraging. And one says that, you know, people who actually left foraging because foraging was part of their life because of economic stress, they would probably also leave foraging soon after the, you know, the crisis is over. Because for them, foraging implies a stressful condition. So unless they actually develop a new relation with the foraging, it's likely that their history of why they foraged will remain with them. Interesting, isn't it? There's so much of psychology involved in anything that you do. So, but there are new people who are brand new to foraging. They have just joined with much trepidation because they are unfamiliar. For them, I see two kinds of people. One said, ever so fearful about actually, even after knowing 100% these are edible, to actually incorporate in their, plate, incorporate in their diet. And I would say that it is better to be that, because it is better to be overcautious than to be extremely adventurous. Because the other group I see is that they have asked question to somebody who they think may know better than them whether it can be eaten or not, but before the answer comes, they have already eaten, and or they have experience such that, oh, you know, I used to have that, I had that twice, nothing happened to me, so why not? But it's not like that, because every single thing comes with a lot of caveats. Things which are even edible, which are clearly edible, there are restrictions in that too. Like, you should eat the young leaves. You should not eat when it is the leaves are older. You should not eat it raw. Like last week, I had mentioned about the chickenweed. You better eat it cooked than raw. Like that, there are caveats in all. So I would say, be a little cautious. And being overcautious is probably not good in anything. But being too adventurous may land you up in quite a bit of trouble. And the thing is, when I say trouble, we don't know. We don't know enough what each wild plant can have an effect on you. Because you as an individual may not react to something, but you offer that to somebody else and they have a completely different physiological condition, their food requirement or how they process, their body processes food is completely different, and they may react very differently. So it's better to have these, you know, caveats known, and then you try out. So my question then, it was like, it has been studied that whenever the society goes into very difficult conditions, people start gardening. But will you call that foraging? They start gardening for food. They turn to using what they have in their yard or in their friend's yard. That truly is foraging. So if it is, for example, one Oroville farm has a bumper crop of papaya, which our distribution system say cannot take, can they be shared free within the community? Will that still be called foraging? These are important questions to question and answer now, because we are facing those situations. Often it happens that when a friend is going to the grocery store and you have no time, or you are planning to go but you cannot go, you ask your friend, oh, can you pick up a kilo of tomatoes for me? just like that. But if you hear your friend is going out foraging, will it be okay to ask, you know, why don't you collect for me too? Will that be, you know, environment friendly? Will that be foragingly ethical? I don't know if there's a term like that, but you know what I mean. Like, will that be the right thing to do? Sharing is the key word for foraging, but sharing with conscience. Sharing without hurting the resource base. If you have come for a weed walk with me before, you have heard me saying that, in my opinion, what is abundant in the season is what one should forage in larger quantity. If what is growing in small patches in small numbers, you either avoid that completely or forage proportionately, which means if there is a tiny little patch, you only forage a tiny little bit of it, not a whole lot. There are some do's and don'ts about foraging, and we will probably get into it next week. However, I want to highlight one thing. Foraging is not just about finding safe or wild food. Foraging is also about opening heart. You cannot forage consciously if you are doing so from the position of scarcity. It's just like the economy. If you are acting from the scarcity, you will quickly go into the fetal position, and you will clench your fist so hard and so tightly that even the limited resource will slip away. Scarcity is often the time to reflect, and it is the time that you look at opportunities that you perhaps didn't think about it before, or there was no reason to even explore before, but now is the time. So if you look at it as an opportunity to find abundance elsewhere, it completely changes the outlook. Foraging is exactly like that. If you're acting from the sense of scarcity, you will tend to overforage. It is only possible when you have not... You will overforage only when you have not mingled with nature. You cannot mingle with nature because you are so fearful. You are there in the nature, but you are really not there. Because you're there physically, but in actually you are in that scared self inside a box. It is this attitude, because of this attitude, we hear that people in the West, you heard that, you know, during the lockdown, that the people went crazy and went around hoarding toilet papers. It is this this effect that when you are scared, you tend to grab, and you tend to grab more than you need. You tend to grab irrespective of whether your friend has, whether your neighbor has the same resources or not. Foraging is like that. If it is this reason, the forager tend to gather every bit. If you are acting from the point of being scared and the point of scarcity, that you don't want to leave anything for anybody, not for the birds, bees, or your fellow foragers. And that's not good for foraging. That's not good for you either, but because even if you are actually picking up healthy food, it's not going to land up. It's not going to help you you being healthy, because you are wound up being scared. So there is a certain do's and don'ts, as I said, and we will talk about it next week. Now I have a few things to announce and tell. Many people have requested to resume the weed walk, the actual weed walk. Since we will be outdoors and maintain utmost precautions, I will see how many people can really, how many of them we can really organize. If you are not in Roots WhatsApp group already, sign up, or Roots Facebook group, and sign up your name that you are interested in going for actual weed walk. Archana or someone will actually maintain a rooster so that we have maximum 5 people per walk. Maximum 5 people is what is allowed right now. For a plant to grow, it needs an environment. Even the weed, which manages to handle erratic and harsh nature much better than, you know, cultivars, Still, it needs some base, you know, where it sometimes it doesn't even need soil, as you have seen, you know, it can kind of grow out of a concrete, but still it needs some base to put its roots in, some moisture to grow, some nutrients which it is able to draw out and nourish itself, and ultimately produces seeds for the next generation. The other day we were talking about a particular training program, actually, for the children that allows conscious decision making and action. So it was pointed out by somebody who has done this training program a lot that receiving this training is not enough. If the children receive this training, the teachers, the parents must also too. Because otherwise the children will be speaking a completely foreign language and nobody else will know what they are talking about it. So foraging is like that. To nurture one learning, one has to create an environment. And we have tried to do that with edible weed walks, the same thing. Foraging and recognizing weeds, incorporating them in your food, knowing when they are growing, what is the best season to forage, from where, and what part, and how to eat, all are part of that environment that we have initiated, that I have initiated with the book, and the rest we will actually co-create as you participate in it too. To enable this learning, apart from the actual book, which is currently out of print, but I hope that there are enough number of copies to go around during the weed walks, and hopefully with a crowdfunding initiative, we will be able to reprint that and the next two volumes soon. But apart from this book itself, there is this Facebook page called Edible Weed Walk with a lot of details about certain plants. And then there is a virtual weed walk, which is actually short videos about some plants, which may be very helpful visually. And then there is this audible weed walk, a weekly podcast. All these actually tries to enable an environment where the learning is faster, quicker, and enjoyable also. I was not so long back, was interviewed by Lalita Krishnan of Heart of Conservation series. It's a podcast which you can find in her blog called Earthy Matters. It was she who pointed out that there are no towns and cities in India, there are actually plenty abroad, where there are so many resources being offered towards weed identification, edible weed walks, and guided tours on edible weeds. So make use of it. Bangalore is perhaps the closest where some of these concerted efforts are made, other than, you know, in Auroville. In COVID times, I had encouraged people to come to as many weed walks as they can with the copies of the edible weed coloring book, and using that as a reference, taking photos juxtaposed with the picture of the book itself. And so that it is, easy to remember the plant that you see. If it is right next to the picture you have seen, then you can read up later. Several people, Emma, Anandi, they were regulars and they were intensely taking notes, making observations, securing their ability to identify weeds. At least some of them as their second self. This has to happen before one starts foraging on their own. There are about 40 plants in the book, and we are not in the race to competing with anybody other than ourselves. So we can take our own sweet time, and this can be different for different people. How much time to identify, you take to identify each plant comfortably, so that it can be like, you don't even have to question, you know that's that plant. That will then enable you to incorporate weeds in your lives, gardens, and ultimately lovingly in your platter. But trust me, the benefit of your connection with nature through this edible weed walk, which will be many folds, much more than just the weeds and the food that you get. So I'll end up with this, and we will see you. I'll talk to you about foraging again in the next podcast next week. Take care and stay safe.